Hello, and welcome to Tantramar Report on CHMA 106.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Sackville, New Brunswick, the heart of the Maritimes, on the traditional and unceded lands of the Mi'kmaq people. I'm Erica Butler. It's Wednesday, November 17th. Coming up on today's show, we chat with local pharmacist Charles Beaver with some questions about booster shots, flu shots, and the kids' vaccine. Also, do you remember this?
I want to take this time for everybody to take some time during this protest and to reflect on the role that they have played in perpetuating rape culture on campus. Did you laugh at a bad joke? Did you not believe a survivor? Did you protect your friends or your teammates? The list could go on. I ask that you acknowledge the harm that you may have caused and take a role of someone who is dedicated to ending rape culture on your campus and all around you. I'm here to say to Matt Allison survivors, we believe you. Thank you.
That's Michelle Roy speaking to a crowd of hundreds of Mount Allison students, staff, and faculty gathered last November to protest Mount Allison's handling of sexual violence on campus. It's now a year later, and tonight a panel will convene to discuss the legacy of that protest. Later in the show, we'll talk with one of the panelists, Dr. Lisa Dawn Hamilton, with her take on the progress that's been made so far. But first, public health reported 34 new cases of COVID-19 in the province on Tuesday, with 10 of those in Zone 1. There are now 516 active cases of COVID-19 in the province and 172 active cases in Zone 1. Across the border in Cumberland County, 8 new cases were reported on Tuesday, bringing the active case count in that health zone to 54. The new Canadian Proof of COVID-19 Vaccination document is now available on MyHealthNB. This document uses the federal standard format adopted across Canada, which is accepted by Canada Border Services Agency and ArriveCan. It provides New Brunswickers who are traveling to jurisdictions that are using QR codes with a reliable way to show they're vaccinated against COVID-19. The province says that within New Brunswick, the documents used for proof of vaccination will not change. People can use an original paper immunization record or a photograph or digital copy of the same, or the digital vaccination status on their MyHealthNB account. Those are all considered valid provincially, along with a valid government ID. When Memramcook Tantramar MLA Megan Mitten took her turn in the provincial legislature for a member's statement this past Friday, she could not have known that within days there would be unprecedented flooding in British Columbia that has cut off major rail and road infrastructure routes in the province. But it's hard not to hear Mitten's warning to the legislature that the Chignecto Isthmus is one perfect storm away from being underwater as somehow more pertinent in the context of what's happening to basic infrastructure in BC this week. Mitten rose to bring attention to the climate risks on the isthmus and also to call on the Higgs government to release the long-since-completed Chignecto Isthmus study. Here she is in the legislature on Friday.
Mr. Speaker, according to the UN, the Chignecto Isthmus, the land connecting New Brunswick and Nova Scotia, is one of the most vulnerable places to climate change in North America. Dikes keep the Bay of Fundy from flooding my riding, the railway, the Trans-Canada Highway, other important infrastructure, agricultural land, and whole communities. As the sea levels rise and the storms become more powerful and frequent, we are one perfect storm away from being underwater. We have been living with perpetual risk while successive governments have failed to act, and we're still waiting. It's terrifying to know that the Chignecto Isthmus study, which has yet to be released, is just an initial step. But I call on the Higgs government to, at the very least, take this step immediately. Everything is moving too slowly. Everything except climate change and sea level rise, and this is putting my riding at severe risk of being a climate disaster.
That was MLA Megan Mitten making a member's statement in the New Brunswick Provincial Legislature on Friday. Sackvillians are going to be spoiled for things to do this week. Tonight, renowned writer and storyteller Leanne Simpson will be reading from her latest novel, Nupimang, The Cure for White Ladies. Simpson is a Miitchisagig Anishinaabeg scholar, writer, and artist who has been widely recognized as one of the most compelling Indigenous voices of her generation. The talk starts tonight at 7 p.m. and is presented by the Faculty of Arts Speaker Series at Mount A. You can find registration links online at chmafm.com. Then on Thursday, renowned environmentalist, scientist, and broadcaster David Suzuki will be speaking at Mount Allison as part of the President's Speaker Series. Suzuki's talk is titled, "We Boast of Our Intelligence, How the Hell Did We Get Into This Mess?" and will be delivered virtually, though audiences can participate both online or in person at Convocation Hall. The event starts at 7 p.m. on Thursday, and tickets are free. Check chmafm.com for links. Also kicking off Thursday is the Bordertown Festival with two events. From 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. on Thursday afternoon, Open Sky Cooperative is hosting a bazaar and open farm event with a variety of activities, including a DIY button-making workshop, guided walks through their mental health path on the marsh, and live music from Harris McSheffrey and Friends. At 8 p.m., Live Bait Theater kicks off three nights of their production, A One-Man Christmas Carol, directed and performed by Ron Kelly Spurls. Tickets for Thursday's show are sold out, but there are still some available for Friday and Saturday. Then on Friday, it's Moonlight Madness, downtown Sackville, with vendors filling up the streets, wagon rides for the kids, and live music at Mel's, co-presented with Sappy Fest. We'll have more details on Friday's show and online at chmafm.com. Just over a year ago, then-graduating student Michelle Roy posted pictures of herself in her graduation robes outside the Mount Allison University sign on York Street. Not an uncommon composition for grad photos, but Roy's were different. In each, she was holding a sign beside the Mount Allison sign saying, "Supports rapists and silences victims." In the text that accompanied the photos, Roy laid bare her reasons. In her 5 years at the university, Roy says she met about 50 victims of sexual assault and had never once witnessed a perpetrator expelled. The post resonated, to say the least. The following week, Roy was leading a massive protest on campus, with hundreds of students, staff, and faculty showing up to call for better handling of sexual violence at the school. Lots has happened since then. And tonight, a panel of Mount A faculty and students will gather for a discussion talking about what progress has been made and what needs to come. I spoke with Dr. Lisa Dawn Hamilton, a Mount Allison psychology professor from the Gender and Women's Studies program, the department organizing tonight's panel at 7 p.m., entitled 1 Year Later, Sexual Violence Prevention at Mount A. Dr. Lisa Dawn Hamilton, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So we've got a panel discussion planned for tonight, Wednesday night at Mount A. Looking back over the past year, in terms of what's been going on with sexual violence prevention at the school, why did you decide to take a look back this week for that?
Well, I think it's really important that we acknowledge that it was approximately a year ago that we first had activism on social media, and then there was a protest this week last year. And I think it's important that we don't forget that we're still working towards addressing these issues. So, of course, they're never going to go away permanently, but we can work to make things better. And we really wanted to make sure it wasn't just a forgotten thing, that we recognize that this is an important component of our legacy at Mount Allison, and that we want to address, not sweep it under the rug, I guess. So reminding people that these are major issues and that we need to keep talking about them.
Now, one of the things, you know, you'll be looking back at sort of what's been accomplished and then looking forward to, you know, what you'd like, what people would still like to see happening. When you look back at this last year, I mean, a lot of things have happened. And it's hard to tell how much progress is made because, I mean, there's so many things that have happened. But, it is one of those things, I guess, the proof is in the pudding. But CLISAR filed their report. There was, you know, the university hired an independent consultant to look at their policies and procedures. Dr. Tasia Alexopoulos has been hired as a new sexual violence prevention and education coordinator. There's been changes to some policies. There's so much to talk about. And obviously, you and the other panelists are going to get into that on Wednesday night. What are some highlights for you in terms of what was accomplished this year?
I think it's also important to note that I was the co-chair of the internal working group. So along with Michelle Roy, who was the student who started the activism and planned the protest, we co-chaired the Mount Allison Sexual Violence Prevention Working Group. So in addition to the CLISAR report, the working group also made a series of recommendations, some of which are included in the CLISAR report as an appendix. And our role as the working group was really to, which is what I'll be talking about at the panel, was really to look at the education, information, and those pieces of the prevention aspect. So while CLISAR was looking at policies and procedures, we were focusing on, you know, what can we do on the ground as students, as faculty. And we made a lot of recommendations, many of which have been taken up. So we made recommendations around the type of person and what the job should consist of the new position that Dr. Alexopoulos is in. And we also made recommendations around broader campus education, and that's something that is really happening. So we have what's called the Seeds of Change training. It's an online training module that's created by Sexual Violence New Brunswick that all first-year students are being encouraged to do, as well as faculty and staff. We held an all-day training session for faculty called the ABCDs of Disclosure, again, run by Sexual Violence New Brunswick. That happened last week. And then there's been all sorts of in-person education, both through Sexual Violence New Brunswick, and I've been doing some as well as a sex educator.
Okay, so there's, you know, like a number of real changes, and hopefully that will make a difference, right? Like getting, I mean, I just think of even just every cohort of first-year students coming in, going through some sort of training and awareness could help change the culture or shift things a little.
Yeah, and that's really what needs to happen is a general cultural shift. And by having shared training, so we have shared language, and things like bystander training. So that's a lot of what the online training that the students are doing is about, is recognizing these things that can happen and recognizing where you can step in or intervene. And I think by having that common language and a common perception with the students, they will really step up and start calling things out more when they see them, and also being aware that a lot of behaviors that we think are normal, because that's what we see on TV and movies, are actually assault or harassment. And so being able to know that and then name those things can be really beneficial to shifting the culture.
Do you see, in terms of when you look forward on this, do you see some gaps that you're hoping will still be filled?
I think there's always going to be unfilled gaps in the sense that we are a small university. We have limited resources. I think we're doing a really great job with the resources we have. For example, we're also hiring an additional person who will be an intake person for sexual violence, who will be a trained counselor. And so I think that will be very beneficial. But it's always important to keep in mind that these issues are broad social issues. And so Mount Allison University cannot solve them all, but we can absolutely do our best to make Mount Allison a safer culture for students to go to school and live in.
Mm-hmm. I know one of the issues that Michelle Roy pointed out time and time again was just the idea of when people brought something forward, like an mm-hmm. informal report, not feeling mm-hmm. it, sort of not really, there was no one to sort of trust that they, you know, they had your interests at heart, as opposed to the school's mm-hmm. interests or the public's interests mm-hmm. or the interest of the person who is, you know, accused and that sort of thing. So do you think that the policies, that there's a few policy changes, and do you see some changes there in terms of what it will be like if someone does have to bring something forward now, and how it will get addressed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think the policy changes or the procedural changes that have happened so far have been really beneficial. And one of the things we've really taken on is the CLISAR recommendation for immediate measures. So these are things like support and accommodations that students can access immediately. And so they don't have to file a formal complaint. They can get these immediate supports and then decide to pursue a formal complaint. They can get the immediate supports and then not submit a formal complaint, but that support process can happen right away and without the need to go further down the complaint road if that's not what the survivor wishes.
Now, this panel tonight is being organized by the Women and Gender Studies program. And I gather, you know, some of your fellow panelists will be others, will be some students, Mount Allison students in that program. And mm-hmm. they're also organizing other events this week. Would you say that the among your the students that you interact with, that this is still mm-hmm. a kind of burning issue? I mean, last year the protest was massive, right? There was like hundreds of mm-hmm. people, and I think it was bigger than mm-hmm. any protest we had seen in quite a while at Mount A. Mm-hmm. Would you say that from the students you interact with, that this is still front of mind?
I think with the students I interact with, I think it is front of mind, but mainly the ones that, you know, I teach classes around sexuality mm-hmm. and trauma and things like that. And so I think it those students that I'm directly in contact with, it is a pretty big issue. But I do think one of the reasons it's important to have this panel is to remind people that this is still a burning issue, because I think with a lot of activism, there is that initial swell of support and then it kind of peters out. And so I do think we are seeing a petering out of students not being perhaps as invested or worrying about it as much. But there's definitely a range of within the student population of people who care a lot and really want to push more to be done, and then people who have kind of forgotten about this issue.
All right. Well, we look forward to hearing what the panel has to say tonight. Lisa, Dawn, I appreciate you taking the time to speak with us.
Thanks for having me.
That was Dr. Lisa Dawn Hamilton. Tonight's panel is called 1 Year Later, Sexual Violence Prevention at Mount A, and takes place at 7 p.m. online. For registration links, check chmafm.com or the Mount Allison Women and Gender Studies program on Facebook. Earlier this month, the province of New Brunswick opened up eligibility to COVID-19 booster shots to include anyone over 65 whose second shot was more than 6 months ago. In addition, healthcare and school workers are eligible, along with people who are immune compromised. People who received one or two doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine are also eligible, as well as people with mixed doses who need to travel outside of North America for essential reasons. Today in Sackville, the Vitalité Health Network is running a walk-in clinic at the Sackville Visitor Information Center from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. The clinic is open to anyone 12 years of age and older and is administering either the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine or the Moderna vaccine. But walk-in appointments are only available to those getting a first or second shot of a vaccine. For third or booster doses, public health is asking people to make appointments online. In Sackville, people can either book a vaccine appointment through public health or through the corner drugstore. The local pharmacy has administered 9,000 shots of COVID-19 vaccines so far in the rollout and continues to administer new doses daily. I called up corner drugstore pharmacist and owner Charles Beaver with some questions about booster shots and more.
Charles Beaver, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here, Erica.
So can you give us the update on the vaccine rollout now that we've moved into booster shots for those 65 and over?
I sure can. So as you mentioned, in the province of New Brunswick, folks who are 65 years of age and older, at least 6 months after their second dose, now qualify for a booster dose. There's also other categories that qualify, regardless of age, if a person has had one or two AstraZeneca doses, and it's been more than 28 days since their last dose, they can get a booster dose as well. And healthcare workers and people working in education are also getting booster doses once they're 6 months from their second dose as well.
Okay. Now, I gather people can't necessarily drop in for those doses. They should register in advance, should they?
Absolutely. At times when we have extra vaccine, either through people not arriving or just to use up a vial, we will put the sign out and have walk-ins when we can. But the vast majority are being done as booked appointments. And now at our website, www.thecornerdrugstore.ca, the very first page has a link to register for dose one COVID vaccine, dose two COVID vaccine, now dose three COVID vaccines, as well as flu shots for clients either 65 years of age and over or the rest of us as well.
Now, both Moderna and Pfizer are available for the third dose, the booster shot, I gather. How do people know which one they should be requesting?
Well, that's a great question. There are folks who want to have their third one the same as the first two, which makes sense to me. The vast majority now have Pfizer as their second dose. Although there are folks who had both first and second doses as Moderna, in which case, if they choose to do Moderna for the third dose, they certainly can. There's some studies that show perhaps maybe that you get a better response by mixing and matching, but the recommendation is that folks should get a booster dose with an mRNA vaccine, and that would be either Pfizer or Moderna. The of course, people who had AstraZeneca as their first and second doses, we can't give that as a third dose simply because we don't have it available to us now. So they would want to pick probably a Pfizer since that's what's most readily available.
Now, previously in your vaccination, your booking system, people could sort of sign up and then you would let them know as soon as they were eligible. Is that a similar thing that could happen now if you're not quite 6 months since your second dose? Could you just put your name in and then you'll be in the queue for when the time comes?
Absolutely. That's the very best thing to do. When people go to register for a third dose, for a booster dose, there's quite a bit of information that the system will ask for, including which vaccines you received and your dates of your first and second doses. And that gives us the ability to very quickly and efficiently send out the invitations just as soon as the person is eligible to receive that vaccination.
Now, I know a lot of people are waiting anxiously for children or younger kids to become eligible. What will be happening with the corner drug once the 5 to 11-year-old cohort becomes eligible?
Well, Erica, we've thought long and hard about that question. We're still vaccinating 7 days a week to keep up with the demand for first, second, and third doses, as well as the influenza vaccine. And we simply don't have more capacity to offer. I've been very glad, though, to have conversations with public health, and I'm aware that plans are in place to promptly vaccinate, the majority of the 750-ish children in that age cohort in our region within the first week or two following the announcement on Saturdays and Sundays. So sounds like the plans are well in place for public health to get that done, and we've offered our support. However, this time around, it won't be done physically at the pharmacy for sure.
All right. You mentioned the flu shot, Charles. Can people get their flu shot at the same time as getting their booster dose?
That's a great question. We now have information to show that it's safe and effective to get your flu shot and your COVID vaccination. It could be done at the same time, could be done one a day after the other, could be done a week or apart. So without regard to the other in terms of timing, so if it's more convenient for someone to get both at the same time, it certainly is an option.
I recall when I got my second dose now, I needed to take a day off there. afterwards, should people sort of plan to, you know, to have a reaction and, you know, to take it easy after they get this booster?
I just had my third dose. It's been 6 months since I had my my second. I had mild sort of, you know, discomfort in the shoulder, maybe feeling slightly off that next day, but I was scheduled to and was able to work my full shift, of course. I think it's wise that somebody allow for that possibility. However, the majority of people do seem to be able to go about their daily tasks without issue. Perhaps one in five-ish might, find it's a little bit much and want to take a down day the next day.
All right. Okay. Well, I mean, I guess we'll start to see the numbers rolling in. Have you kept track of how many third doses you've administered so far?
Specifically not third doses, although the last tally shows that we'll surpass 9,000 total doses given by the end of this week from the corner drugstore. Things are moving along, and about 700 influenza vaccines, which is more than any prior year already.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And we're just at the beginning, so there you go.
Exactly, yeah.
All right. Well, many thanks, Charles. I appreciate your time yet again.
Glad to be here, and you have a great day.
That was Corner Drugstore pharmacist and owner Charles Beaver. You can register for a vaccination at thecornerdrugstore.ca. That's it for CHMA's Tantrum Hour report for this Wednesday, November 17th. As always, we hope you'll get in touch with comments or questions at news@chmafm.com. I'm Erica Butler. Thanks for listening.